State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us from his State House office for Tacky Talk today. Tacky, what's going on?
Hey Joe, good to see you on this wonderful Wednesday morning on the 14th at about 11, almost 11:10, and I am indeed in the Senator's office. I still come to the office despite what people think, and despite having remote work. Before the onset of this laptop and remote work, I actually did come to the office a lot during the out of session, out of formal session time period, informal sessions. I did come more often. But because, like everyone else, particularly in the white collar areas, remote work had me home more often. And it's this weird dynamic that carried over from COVID. So I do actually come to the office, but today is a little special. We are in because we have a Democratic caucus at 12, and then we're going to vote on the Economic Development Bond Bill and the Energy Bill starting around 1 o'clock-ish. For a reminder, the legislature needs to vote, a formal vote, on any bonding item. It's by constitution. An economic development bond bill has about $500 million in bonding authorizations for the governor. So that's why we call it a formal session. And we discussed in prior podcasts about the various mechanisms in the rules for reconvening us, including, in fact, just issue an order. And that's essentially what they did.
What's in that bond bill? Can you tell us any of the big ticket items and maybe how they relate here to Quincy?
Well, there's quite a bit of money for Quincy. There's a $2 million bond in there for the President's Library. We got $2 million for judging Quincy Bay. We got actually over $1 million for pre-planning of dredging on top of that, so over $3 million. And then we have like another million plus, like 1.2 plus, for economic development projects associated with the city. We did all right. We got about $5-ish billion, or six, actually about $6 billion. Of which half of that will go to Quincy Bay dredging, which is a priority for those even who are not boaters will realize that the 6-foot channel in Quincy Bay actually helps flush the water out. As the sediment fills the bay, the bowl fills. And if the bowl fills high enough, when the tide goes out, the water doesn't move.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, well, the yacht clubs will be happy to hear that, I'm sure.
Yep. And it actually will help. The occupants will be happy to hear that, and which should help on the bay's water quality in the long term. And
Oh,
it's
yeah,
about,
to offer better flushing.
yeah, and it's about an average of 20, 25 years between dredging. And if I remember correctly, the last time we did dredging was 98.
Wow, okay, so it's been more than that. So
Yeah.
is this the full funding now? Can the project go ahead?
I think we may, the city needs to come at 25% of the cost. The number keeps shifting around because of inflation, so this has been a bit of a moving target. But I think we'll probably need another million somewhere.
Okay.
The city needs to put up its own 25% share. So we're closing it. I think I'm hesitant to say the exact project cost because the number keeps shifting on us. So it's closing it on 7+ million, I think.
Okay. All
So
right. Well, you're halfway there, just about.
just about, because we also had $2 million from a prior bond authorization too, and we got like a million, couple another million three from 1.6 million from the last of the ARPA money. This has been a puzzle, folks. I mean,
Yeah.
not everything I do here is like one slam dunk and you're done. You actually have to puzzle funding from both one-time available sources and cash, if you get your hands on it, plus various bonds, whether it be environmental bonds or economic development bonds. And he said to get still get the government to authorize release of those bonds. And the city needs to come up with its 25% share of these projects as well. So it's then you also have to do the environmental evaluation, that even though it's been done before, you have the planning and design, then you have the notification, and then you have dredge tests because you actually have to test what you're dredging up to see the danger or not danger associated with it before they continue.
Okay.
I believe there's only two dredges in the entire East Coast of the United States.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, one of them was Cashman. I
Oh,
don't have
sure.
the, yeah. So yeah, then you got to get into the schedule. And there's an Army Corps component to this. These things take about 3 to 4 years to do once you actually start the process. But the funding needs to be there. And so the city's city commit 25% is important because it encourages administration to release us the bond funds to the city.
Okay.
Hold it in the Waterways Trust Fund. But I mean, we've been told by the city they can come up with their cut. So yeah, so these aren't easy things to, as you guys can all hear from my multi-year journey
Yeah.
cobbling money together.
This is interesting. This is, but I think people don't, I myself included, don't realize how what it takes to get a project actually started and completed.
Well, let's say I have left, like let's say I did run for re-election this year, right? The new rep would be saddled with this project with no clue what was going on.
Right.
And then there's this expectation on delivery that would be very difficult. Now, I'm not saying you should act, I'm going to be here forever, nor am I saying you should never get rid of me. That's what I'm suggesting to anybody. No, it's just a reality, this type of work with its institutional knowledge. And then
Yeah.
there's no like magical pass down of information. And electeds like to have their own staff. They don't keep the previous elected staff.
That's right. So yeah, so you, I mean, your staff would know about this, but they would likely go with you, right?
That's correct. So this is kind of those funny things with this business where every time you get a new elected, and we have 22 new electeds coming in on January 1st, that will be in that position where they have to, inherit or not inherit the prior rep's work. I'll give you an example of one where my good friend Amy Moss Angiolo, who won the seat in Newton, is replacing Kay Khan, who was a 30-year rep.
Wow.
So she was elected in 93. So can you imagine being a new rep, carrying work from a rep that's been there for 30 years?
No, I can't. No, I can't. Aren't there files? Isn't everything on record for them to peruse?
Not necessarily. I mean, paper is a premium space, and a lot of stuff we did was predating PDFs. Kisa Khan, she was here for 30 years. Not a lot of stuff was PDF. So a lot of it's institutional-based knowledge and how to do things. And then you lose your seniority. So poor Amy is going to discover very quickly that no one cares what she thinks for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of starting from scratch all over again. Wow, interesting. Okay.
Start at the bottom of the ladder. And she was an adult woman for 20 years. So, I mean, she's not the only one. I mean, many others here are replacing long-term reps. Bill Strauss is another one from Mattapoisett. He was here for about 30 years. A new young rep coming in has to inherit all this work that he didn't create.
Right.
And I did the same thing too when I came in. I mean, Steve Tobin was here for 22 years. And when he left and I ran and got the seat, discovered, all these different things going on in district that, I had to follow through on for at least the
Right.
first term and a half. It took about 3, 4 years to close out some of the stuff.
I can see how that would be. Yeah, I would bet that the constituents who were advocates for all of these measures would immediately reach out to the new rep and say, "Hey, don't forget about me."
Well, also continuation of existing open constituent cases.
Right.
So if you've got like an open unemployment case or RMV problem or a housing problem, you guys all know I do a lot of constituent services. So you actually inherit these constituents with no knowledge of who they are.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yep.
And they don't know who you are either sometimes.
Right. That's true.
They may
Yeah.
have voted against you, but it's still your constituents.
Regardless, you've got them now. Yeah.
I don't know. You got to finish that constituent services.
Interesting. What else is in the economic bill?
The life science component's a big deal. Like I said, it's over $500 million bonds, including life sciences. We do some stuff for education, education diversity, more STEM stuff. We do some stuff for the Mass Historical Commission grant program. We reauthorized that money. It's we do a lot of actually, let's be honest, a lot of earmarks for most local and local projects. Many of them relevant to the economy. Oddly enough, that includes celebration of 400 birthdays, like Lexington's Concord's 250th anniversary of the revolutions has a funding component in there. So it's a very broad definition of economic development, especially as we hit an anniversary year next year. So we have that kind of stuff. There's some interesting provisions there. For example, we're going to allow, if the governor doesn't veto it, she can line in and veto this bill. Things like allowing small tastings at what do you call it? Farmers markets for beer. Right now, you have tastings and sale of spirits and wine at farmers markets. We're going to allow craft beer, craft breweries, to be able to do that as well. Of course, with permission of the farmers market, it is
Yeah.
a right. But I mean, there's still the same restrictions as spirits and wines regarding number of samples, wine you can sell, as well as trying to prevent intoxication.
Well,
Obviously,
yeah, there's that.
you don't want to be just sampling nonstop, right? That's not a good thing.
Right.
So we have some of those kind of outside sections, theater tax credits in there, similar to the film tax credit. This one's actually a much smaller tax credit in terms of its cap, of 7 million, towards live production that actually generates work in Massachusetts, meaning you're hiring local crews.
Okay.
So when you have something come into the Orpheum, for example,
Yep.
I asked these as the union for theater. So they would hire, I asked these crew, and you got to demonstrate that you've been hiring local folks and qualify for a tax credit, and also encourages other big productions, but also can apply to smaller community theater and similar musical type performances around the state to develop their own performing arts as well as hiring local. Yeah, this has been floating around for about, I think, 8 years now. It's been bouncing around as an idea, so it finally made its way to the Economic Development Bond Bill.
Very good. Yeah, that's something I hadn't thought of. That's great. There's, of course, the Curtain Call Theater right in Braintree, so they might benefit from that.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then you have we did something with home inspector contractors. I know somebody watched the Channel 10 news the last few years of Ryan. Yeah, I think his last name right now. But the spotlight reporting on home inspector contract home and contractors.
Yeah, it's kind of Kath, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan Caff about the leaving people high and dry in the
Yeah.
home contractors and the challenges of accessing the fund for customers that have been scammed and some of the complexities associated with said fund. So we did some stuff to hopefully streamline it a bit, increase the amount that you're able to receive from 10,000 to 25,000, and also change a little bit of verification. So one of the problems people have today on accessing that fund is the fact you have to demonstrate you actually tried to recover your money first, which is actually hard and not hard. I mean, it's weird. I say that kind of in a, I know it sounds like it's oxymoron. Like you actually have to issue, like get a sheriff, constable, issue the notice of recovery and then demonstrate you've done that. They have to demonstrate you actually attempt recovery in courts. We modify that to try to simplify that, at least there's an attempt made, but you don't have to go like hire another attorney to go find the money.
That's good, yeah, because that, I mean, that's costs on you in addition to what you're already out to the contractor, yeah.
Yeah, we do still want people to make the attempt,
Yeah, okay.
because we don't want people to double recover.
Right. No, obviously, right. Yeah, for sure. Okay, that's good. That's good.
So you got some good stuff on the outside sections on those kind of things, and we'll see what the membership's response is. Democratic caucus is at 12 o'clock, as I said earlier, and we'll see what the response from the membership is on this.
Okay. And also, you mentioned an energy bill too.
Yeah, as before I came on the air, I got the 16-page summary.
Oh, very good.
As if you're on video, you can see me waving this big document.
You have that in electronic form? We can send that over.
Yeah, there's maps, people,
Oh,
maps.
my. Yes.
The big thing is really the permitting process. One of the challenges or benefits, depending what side of the fence you're actually permitting anything in Massachusetts, takes a lifetime.
Well, that's been one of the complaints from developers, right? That's kind of the hindrances to the housing development in the state.
Well, this is about building power generation. So it
Gotcha.
doesn't matter if you're building, honestly, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're doing fossil fuels or renewable. It is completely a slow and meandering process that involves a whole lot of local government and local folks expressing support or opposition, which can create obstacles in time, which costs money for development. And as we move forward with things such as battery technology in particular, which are people have visions of battery technology as like, small, actually they can be the size of buildings, to be honest with you, for battery storage for things like windmills and solar, that
Yeah.
is an energy setting issue. So we're going to allow the consolidation of permitting to have all your projects go off as one giant permit request. Why? Well, batteries is the easy example. So you don't just don't do one battery at a time. It's asinine. You needed multiple batteries and multiple points in the transmission system for renewable power that only generates during certain times of day, aka solar. And you just don't put one up. That means you have to file like 80 permits. And you have to evaluate each one individually.
Oh, no wonder why it takes so long.
Well, battery technology is on its way. I'm not saying it's here yet, but it's en route. So we'll try to anticipate the future, knowing what this technology will need to do. And that's kind of part of the problem. So, it's hard for energy siting to say, okay, I'm going to look at this one thing in like Fall River, but we're going to look at another one in like Lee. I'm just picking random places because I don't know whether I don't have the transmission map in front of me. So just random choices right there. But I mean, I'm going to evaluate them separately and permit separately, but the project won't work because it needs to be done as a complete unit.
And then what after that, would they still need federal energy regulatory approval?
Well, actually, battery technology is not generation. They're not FERC.
It's just storage, right?
Now, FERC, as a general rule, if you generate more than 2 megawatts for not personal use, meaning you're using it for to put into the main system, the grid system, FERC has a degree of oversight. Anything at, is it two? Is it five? Maybe it's five. I think it's 5 megabytes. I haven't looked 5 megawatts. It's a little while since I looked at it, but FERC does have regulatory oversight regarding generation facilities to put power into the main grid system. So you may get your FERC permit. So let's say put up a windmill farm. Again, I'm not saying it's going to happen, people. I'm just putting it as an example because I know windmill farms freak out certain folks depending where you're living in the state. As I've seen it firsthand in public hearings, what happens when you put a windmill farm suggestion out there? We'll never forget my trip to Hancock, Massachusetts, and 6 hours of testimony, people kicking the crap out of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were not happy. I didn't
Where's
know.
Hancock? Where's that?
It's like one of the last communities on the New York border.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, this is like back in my first term, and I was like, oh, this is ugly. So people, talk about NIMBY. Well, there's NIMBY and it's being in a public hearing, listening to NIMBY. So, but I mean, let's say you want to build a wind farm somewhere, you find perfect wind. You might be able to permit that. You might have to permit that perfect wind in more than one location. So it might be multiple communities at once.
So this is attempt to streamline that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. If you want to try to build a big solar farm for the grid system, same thing. The large scale wind projects off of Block Island Sound and that we're buying power from, was kind of already, it's outside the boundaries of a community because it's technically in federal water, which involved federal permitting long before we had this conversation about putting windmills in the water. So the federal government, under actually every administration, actually, that doesn't matter your political party, has been of doing studies and permitting federal waters for large windmill developments up and down the eastern seaboard. Obviously, you can't put them anywhere. You still have to do the studies on the wind consistencies. But yeah, that's something going on. So energy siting, for example, that's outside the bounds of Massachusetts, so that doesn't affect. So that's an example of something that's kind of a federal state project. It's something that is not partisan, like contrary to what people may think. And it's continually ongoing as the federal government continues to figure out the future of offshore wind development. It's a lot of work. And there's also environmental impacts. I mean, whales, fish, all kinds of
Birds.
birds, migration issues is part of today's considerations when you put out these permits.
And the fishing industry too, right?
Yeah, because you don't want to get in the way for obvious reasons. So, that's kind of part of it as well. So it's kind of the big signature piece of the energy bill. I mean, there's some stuff for electric car charging, but it's things like allowing the Division of Weights and Standards to oversee electric car charging stations regarding the fact whether or not they're actually doing what they're doing. You may not realize this, but when you go fill up a gas tank next, you can see on a sticker on there from the city of Quincy, weight and measures, confirming that gas is actually pumped in at the right amount that's actually going in to reflect the meter that you're paying for. The state sets the regulations for local weights and measures. And the state actually has an official weights and measures building regarding the science of weights and measures.
No, you'll see that same seal on like the scale at your deli.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you want to make sure you're getting what you pay for.
Well, yeah, right now, if you use electric car charging station, you're paying for electricity in an electric car start charging station. You actually have no idea if they're actually accurate or just scamming you.
Right. It's not regulated right now, right? Yeah.
Nope, there is zero consumer protection on that, and there's no way to verify it because how would you know as a consumer unless you can hack the system, right?
That's unless you're an electrician and you have your own monitors that you can hook up to it and see.
Yeah, basically, you have to break the thing open, and you got to do it yourself, right?
Right.
So there's a provision there to reflect that things are changing around this, and for some reason, no one thought about consumer protection on that spot. And I've had talks with consumer affairs as well as the Division of Standards about the fact that, this is kind of Wild Wild West, or whether that consumers are actually getting what they pay for.
Well, it's typical cart before the horse type situation. That technology advanced quicker than the government could regulate it. Yeah.
Yeah, we put in a priority of bond bills regarding encouraging more development charging stations around the state. So you're right, this is a cart and horse scenario.
Yeah. Okay.
So we got
Interesting.
some good stuff that, comes out at a local level. We
Yeah.
have, but again, the permitting is the big part of it all. That is the signature piece in this bill.
Yeah, all right. We'll have to see how it goes. We'll talk about it next week and see how it went today.
Don't expect much opposition.
Oh, that's good. Do you want to talk about what's going on nationally at all, Tacky?
Well, I mean, the House is not surprising. I don't know why anybody should be surprised. It's definitely going to be in Republican control.
It's what happened the first time that Trump was elected, right?
Yeah, for those of us who remember history, it generally, not always, but generally you'll see the party that wins the presidency will also win Congress, even if it's by small margins, which I think it will be still in the House.
Yeah.
And during the by-elections, during the midterms, generally it pops. One of the other chambers will swap. Senate's a little quirky because it's one third at a time.
Right.
So which one third of competitive states coming up will sh may shift the balance of power?
Right.
This year, I think everybody knew, if unless you were under a rock in politics, that the sequence of states coming up the side was already going Republican anyway. It was a lead that direction for not from just the last cycle, but from like the last five cycles. You could see the trend. So there was no like shocker. I mean, unless you're like, if you pay attention to this, it's just the way the way it's the way the country's election cycles work. It's just how it is. And voting trends will demonstrate and provide guidance on the potential of Democrat or Republican senator, right? And the
It's
same.
how many candidates, how they make their decision whether or not to run at a certain time. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of retirements. So the Trump administration is not wasting time. I'm not surprised. The second run around, I expect it to be considerably more efficient and faster regarding decision-making processes. This is one of the advantages or disadvantages, depending what side of the political spectrum you're talking about. Someone that actually does know because he's been here before. And and I've been watching some CNBC because I'm tired of the other talking head news for a bit, and decided to watch the business news. And people shouldn't, again, people shouldn't guess what's going to happen because sadly in politics, particularly at the that level of politics, what you say and what you do are sometimes very two different things.
Absolutely. And I try to tell people that all the time. And it just doesn't register because it's not exciting, I guess, or doesn't get the shock factor that they're hoping for.
And there's also like realities, right? I mean, yeah, he built a wall. He didn't build much of a wall.
No. And I don't think Mexico paid for any of it.
No, none of it. And even then, I mean, we built a fence. I mean, let's not delude ourselves, people here. I mean, people have some delusions that, there's those massive successes. I mean, I was listening to like this trade war talk. We've been in a trade war through the Biden administration. I mean, these people weren't focused on it because the Biden administration didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
But we have been in a trade war for a long time, people. It's been a
Yeah.
trade war for 8 years. I mean, you may not remember, but when inflation started coming up, there was active conversation about reducing tariffs to try to reduce the cost of goods for you and I, from not from just China, but other trading partners around the world. And there was active discussion in the Biden administration about whether or not should be pulling back on tariffs. And the decision was no in the end. which continue to keep our cost of goods up as a result, because you and I pay the tariffs, people. It's a sales tax, essentially.
But basically, yeah, and the economy necessitates that, otherwise companies will go out of business.
Yeah, they just pass it to us. I mean, please be under no delusion that a tariff is not a sales tax. It's basically a national sales tax. So, I mean, it doesn't make up for any lost revenue, and it does take money out of your pocket. It's just like an excise tax. You pay an excise tax on alcohol, you just never see it. It's built in the cost of the product.
And the country is vastly dependent on imports. Remember when the longshoremen went on strike? There were, dire predictions of shortages of everything from, I don't know, baby powder to cars.
Yeah, we talk about $10 billion, $100 billion of economic impact as a result of longshoremen, but also a major exporter. And exporters, we talked about this actually during COVID, but exports and the fact that a strong U.S. dollar hurts U.S. exports because foreign consumers are paying more for our products because our dollar is so strong in the currency, and our dollar is still extremely strong. So some folks that believe bigger is better and stronger is good is wrong when it comes to exports, U.S. exports, because it makes it harder for outside country people to consume our goods.
So it's gonna impact that for sure, yeah.
Also impacts tourism.
Because their dollar doesn't go as far visiting here.
Yeah, I'll give you a very simple example. I mean, the Canadian dollar to U.S. dollar historically has been very stable at 1.25. Canadian dollars to one U.S. dollar, 25% benefit to U.S. consumers or U.S. travelers. It's something that we've enjoyed and pretty much fairly consistent for a long time. It's now floating about 1.35, $1.35 Canadian dollars, give or take a penny, depending on what day we're talking about, which even weakens the Canadians coming to visit us, even though it may benefit Americans going to Canada, which means U.S. goods going to Canada costs 10 cents per dollar more, or 10 cents more than 1.25, and they have the cost of living problem like we do. They have a high unemployment. They have the same problems we have. We discourage Canadians from buying U.S. goods.
And that has a cumulative effect around the world.
Stable dollar, it's good for U.S. export. It really is. And stable dollar creates good for U.S. tourism. And tourism is a number three economic driver for Massachusetts. So tourism's really good right now, but who knows what's going to happen. So I know they've aggressed a bit to tariffs, but I mean, but yeah, basically it's a sales tax, and we've been living with one under two different presidents who did all kinds of tariffs that doesn't help inflation and affects your pocketbook, and it won't. It's not a replacement for tax collection from the general public, because it's not a one-on-one, it's not a one-for-one situation, because it's like, every tax dollar, they do a tax cut, you have to replace it with another dollar, but a tariff doesn't do that because it's not a uniform tax policy. It's not like a class of people. Like, what's the class of people, right? Wealthy people above a certain income guideline at a higher tax rate, it's not the same as tariffing that same group of people at a higher tax rate, because you don't necessarily know what that income bracket is going to buy.
Oh, exactly, right. Yeah.
Meanwhile, a lot of us have benefited from things like Gap clothes and dollar stores and TJX and other products that a lot of us consume that are low and moderate and even upper middle income, that are bigger consumers of that stuff and will have a larger adverse impact, because obviously wealthy people can absorb this type of tariff tax than we can at the other end of the economic bracket.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, absolutely. And it puts everything in the future uncertain as to what's going to happen with inflation, with interest rates. It's everything's in flux now.
It also hurts small business,
And that too, yeah.
because it drives the cost of small business depending on what it is. So during the first Trump administration, one of the ones they kind of messed up on was vanilla and cocoa. So the heavy tariff cocoa and vanilla, especially cocoa from South America, because they thought they could leverage it against cocoa creating countries, which nothing actually did happen. But your price of chocolate went up a lot, and it really hurt small businesses in particular who are chocolate makers.
Pure Affections in Quincy, you know, places like that. Exactly, yeah.
This is the disconnect between DC and Main Street.
Yeah. Stay tuned, folks, for that.
Yeah, we'll
Somebody
see. I
asked,
mean,
Jackie.
no, you can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone says a business guy, is a good guy for the economy. Yeah, but it depends what business they come out of. It, not all business people universally the same business people.
Well, it's like, it's just like, all people aren't the same either, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I think that I don't like that kind of broad-based presumptions. Everyone's an individual. Everyone comes with different backgrounds. Everyone brings their unique skills, and don't presume that you know what those unique skills are. Not like you and I have been personally in the office with these folks and actually know what they're like, right? I mean, it's a broad stroke, broad brush stroke. And in elections in America, you just take faith that it's going to work out.
Yeah. Like I said, I have a list for John Adams when I die. I have many questions for him.
And John Hancock
Yes.
and
What did you mean when you said?
Jefferson Adams, Hancock,
Yeah, all of them.
Bowdoin. There's a lot of folks.
I have a list.
What are you trying to get at? And I think the answer is going to be very political. It's whatever you think it is.
Oh,
They can
great.
see it.
You mean I waited all this time and you don't have an answer?
I think they would do that to you.
I agree.
The
Just know
country was,
based
they
on
made
some of
a,
their writings, yeah.
well, people forget that country, the country they made was for future generations, not necessarily just for them.
That's true. Yeah.
But there's an idealism that's not really captured anymore. But it's a unique, again, the founding of this country has such unique history, unique characters, unique people, unique backgrounds. That's unlike any other type in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's still the great experiment, right? It's only 250 years, not a long time.
But as of 250 years, a very stable government.
That's
If you look
true.
around the world, most governments don't last this long. The countries do, the cultures do, but the government does not.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true. Yeah.
That's why it's kind of a unique thing because we're constantly in evolution. And, at least I always have enormous faith in the public as well as the Constitution itself regarding the sustainability of a stable government. So, I also believe people are patriots. People, are committed to the country as a whole. Beyond their personal interests when push comes to shove.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of idealism out of me, folks.
Yeah, but I think it's somewhat true, I think. And that really was evident during all the neat Veterans Day ceremonies in Quincy last weekend.
Yeah, I made it to Saturday's event for the unveiling of the active duty soldiers dedication. It was lovely. I do, again, highly recommend people make a quick stop at Mount Walsall Cemetery on a seaside entrance and take a look. It's really, really well done. And the recognition of the different armed forces, although I still for the love of can't understand or know what's going on, Space Force.
Space Force is even a flag, I know.
I just honestly, I just do not know how that works. The other ones are pretty, 100 years of understanding at this point.
Right. Well, the Marines are 249 years, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, but the city did an incredible job. The mayor, the council, the cemetery staff, the parks department, I mean, Veterans Affairs, they did all a great job on Saturday. And I and there was a couple of dinners I didn't make this past weekend as well. And sadly, I couldn't make it to Veterans Day. My mom had a medical appointment. So, as we all know, we have different priorities and they sometimes come in conflict. So sadly, I missed out on a Veterans Day parade.
Yeah, it was one of the longest I remember in recent times. It was really, really well attended, many units, and a great keynote speaker, and Colonel Kroll as well.
Yeah, Brad Crow's cousin or uncle.
His uncle, yeah, gave a great speech.
Yeah, actually, I always enjoy the Veterans Day speeches because it puts in context real people's lives. And I always say that the various memorials around the city being inside neighborhoods is a reminder for folks that they're just like anyone else that lives in that neighborhood. They just made the ultimate sacrifice for us to enjoy what we enjoy today. But we should never forget they were just like everybody else.
Yeah, that's right. They could have been your neighbors very easily,
Yeah.
and maybe, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, they paid the ultimate price. A kid from the neighborhood. So,
Yeah.
it's my neighborhood. did attend Speaker Mariano's uncle's plaque unveiling at the Point Webster School.
Oh, I didn't, I wasn't aware of that, Jackie.
Yeah, that was on Tuesday. John Mariano was a private who went to Point Webster. Apparently, I didn't realize that Ron's entire family went to Point Webster. I have no idea. It's not like I stalk people. I mean, there's a close affiliation with Ron and all the family members of that school, and a lot of good memories of the place. And it was very touching. He died in the Korean War at the Battle of Baldy at the age of, I actually have the dates a little mixed up, but I mean, he enlisted at 16. He died 4 years later, so I'm presuming 19 or 20. I
Okay.
forget the exact dates as I talk to you. Yeah, and Ron, was very sincere comments about his last time he saw his uncle before going to Korea and well, enlisting. And it's very touching to remind folks that another war hero who was never intending to be one gave his life overseas to defend our freedoms. And again, another kid from the neighborhood that went to a local school that thousands of kids go through that school now.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about having that plaque, that dedication, is today's youngsters will ask, maybe ask questions and learn about that.
Yeah, it's more descriptive, which is nice because it tells a little bit about his life in very short sentences, which again creates the question as opposed to just putting a name someplace. It's the story that matters to me. It's not necessarily just a name. There's a story of every name, and I like to learn that story.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Tacky, your favorite topic, ballot questions.
Why?
Well, I just want to know if there's any scuttlebutt on Beacon Hill about question one.
Nope, I got nothing for you. I mean, the speaker and the Senate president are having conversations. Obviously, committees are still working, but we're coming into basically 6 weeks to close the session. December 31st is the official session closing because swearing in day is December, I'm sorry, January 1st is swearing in day when all committees dissolve immediately. And need to be reformed under a new set of rules because it's a new session and everything in the past session goes bye-bye. That's how it works. So, even if committees want to try to do something, there's no guarantee that the committee chair you have today is going to be the committee chair next. So I suspect there's going to be conversations up in leadership level because I don't think leadership is going to change. That being said, even if leadership want to try to move forward on something, there's no reason to talk about it just yet because there's no committees to talk about
Oh, all right.
I know it's the ultimate cop-out.
It definitely is, but I understand.
So, reminder to folks, three ballot questions did pass. The
Yes, one, two, and three.
two and three.
Yeah,
Really convenient how the numbering worked out
it
this year.
really was. Yeah, it makes very simple reporting, actually. And yeah, I know the Department of Education looking at the MCAS question now and see what they can do about that.
Yeah, obviously, administration has to participate in this because implementation is actually on their part, especially question two, because it upends an existing system. We've
Right.
talked about this before on graduation requirements. There's a whole No Child Left Behind component from the days of George H. Bush, as they did their massive ed reform. It took like 20 years to do.
Yeah, 1993, I think.
Yeah, it was multiple administrations. That ed reform was not like one thing.
Yes, right. Yep.
That thing went through like four presidents
Yeah.
to make it work. I
And
mean,
now there's talk of eliminating the Department of Education at the federal level, so who knows? Yeah.
oh, again, there's a lot of talk in D.C. We'll actually revisit this conversation as more news comes out about,
Yeah, yes, yeah.
yeah, what it means to us at our level, how we can or cannot respond. And people forget there are constitutional limits for the states. It isn't like the state has carte blanche abilities. The U.S. Constitution and state constitution does limit our ability to do certain things too. So, but yeah, we'll revisit those conversations as the year goes
That's
by.
right. To be announced, to be
Yeah.
determined. Yeah.
But but I mean, the question three one's actually interesting because I'm not sure how that would work too.
Oh, the unionization for the drivers. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it would be implemented exactly either.
Yeah.
So, if I'm correct, obviously Education Committee deals with question two, Labor and Workforce Committee will deal with question three, and no idea how you, who gets question one in this deal.
Over to you on that.
I'm a consumer and licensing chair. It's not sound like it's inside my.
For another month or so. Okay, and then we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. I mean, right now we're processing homebrew petitions from cities and towns on their liquor license requests.
Ah,
So
okay.
those who live outside of Quincy know there's town meetings that have gone on the past 6 or so weeks where they passed new ordinances, funding, and petitions to the legislature. So we're working on that stuff still every day, trying to do our due diligence to make sure that the request is actually,
Yeah.
grounded in something, like there's a reason for the request. As we get out of Thanksgiving and closing to Christmas, two things will happen. Committees will definitely slow down considerably closing to Christmas time. And then we'll see what I refer to as the pre-New Year's rush, where leadership teams have agreed to move smaller bills that may or may not affect your life, but mostly very isolated impacts towards the very end of the session, where there'll be a flurry of activity between the two branches. So waiting to see if that's going to happen. I've already had my conversations with Ways and Means, trying to get a sense of what they're thinking. Obviously, they didn't give me a whole lot of information, but they still got to get a sense if I'm going to be here near as he as a committee chair and also trying to move or stop depending on the circumstances bills.
Yeah.
You don't know until you actually know, because you don't know until you actually know.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. What a uncertain way to conduct your life.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the legislative lifestyle. I mean, the funny thing, I was talking to a friend about this. Everyone knows I staffed here, I interned here long before I got elected. But well over half my life has been living in this 2 year cycle, legislative schedule, limited time when I could like take off vacations or personal projects and whatnot, because the way the schedule works, keeps you here working. And even for me, this is like a massive adjustment. Like I came in before email, I came in before video cameras, I came in with just some fax machines and typewriters, right? People forget I'm a little older than I let on. And the evolution and change regarding technology and how we do things. But the schedule is the same schedule I've been living with half my adult life, for better or for worse.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. Well, and we appreciate your service, Jackie.
Actually, not half my adult life, half my life, period. Just dawned on me. Oh, I just have this real like midlife crisis moment.
Oh, we're
Half
having this
my,
live on the air here.
yeah, half my actual life, not half my adult life, half my actual life.
Yeah.
I've been living under this very limited,
Oh,
weird.
okay. So next time I see you, you're going to have like gold chains and tattoos for your
My
midlife
hair will go white just for you, Joe.
crisis. You'll pull up in a red Maserati or something.
Yeah, well, my hair has gone white, or I'm shedding hair, and you can collect. But no, it's again, it's I'm not complaining. It's just you get to a certain age, you start to realize that this is the lifestyle you've accepted and you've taken. This is one of those things that you volunteer for. It's not like someone made you do this. You volunteer to do this to yourself.
Anything going on in your district we should talk about?
We're starting the Christmas season. Thanksgiving is coming up. Obviously, the city has a wonderful Christmas weekend like we do every year at City Hall. Santa's coming in a helicopter. We have the Christmas tree parade on December 1st. There's a lot of things going on there. Pearl Harbor Day is, I believe, the Saturday, in the first Saturday of December. You have neighborhood things like Adam Schur's gonna have his own neighborhood Christmas party just for the neighborhood, and that you'd be have to be invited by some one of the neighbors to go. And then you see some Christmas fair type stuff that started at like the high schools on the Christmas fair type situations. And then I was telling one of the friends that stayed us that for me, once I get out of Thanksgiving period, this slowed down significantly for us in Quincy and events. But also like to wish Uncle Sam a happy 85th birthday.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he's having a celebration this Sunday that they will stop in and say hi.
Oh, very nice.
So, if you see Uncle Sam, you definitely know who Uncle Sam is when I say that. Wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, very nice. I didn't know that. Happy birthday, Uncle Sam. That's great. Known Uncle Sam for years and years.
Yeah, definitely drop him a line on Facebook, or you see him next out in the street. He's in great shape for 85.
So yeah, he'll be in the Christmas parade, I'm sure, again this year. He does never misses. So look for him. And actually, 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from today is Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, I'm in charge of Thanksgiving dinner again this year. I'm trying to rearrange my schedule to prepare to cook. We're trying to figure out exactly how many people. I think we're past nine. So, kind of working on that still.
Okay. I'll expect a complete menu next week.
Well, you could also expect, we could do it like a live show of me running around the kitchen, desperately trying to get stuff done.
That's a different show.
Yeah. And of course, Thanksgiving Day is the North Quincy High School football game,
Yes.
which is a proud tradition of the two high schools.
Yes, they can watch that live here on QATV as well as the parade live too.
Exactly. So, yeah, still some stuff going on. Like I said, I'm very fortunate once I get out of the Thanksgiving period. It slows down. Other reps, are really active right from Christmas to New Year, local activities. I'm not complaining.
Well, I know you've got a Democratic caucus coming up, so here's the time where you let folks know how to get a hold of you.
Sure, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the number. As you can tell, I'm in the building. I do still show up, as well as the staff. I'm room 42 of the State House. Come visit. Please do visit the stairs for tours. It is a quiet time right now because tourist season is coming to a close. So I always encourage people to visit. Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. You can see pictures of my comings and goings. You have Tacky Chan at X, continuation of that comings and goings. Where I've been, tackychan.org is the contact page slash resource page. MALegislature.gov, MALegislature.gov is the state website for legislature. Very much encourage people to visit there before you ask me about a bill standing, because the bill history is there. I don't know anything more than there, because the stuff is simultaneous with the internal and external system. So what you see out there is what I know on bill statuses. And of course, QATV with Joe every week or 2 weeks. And as I always say, check in with Joe in the morning for his 10-minute updates.
Thanks, Jackie. Have a great week.
Thank you, Charlie. Talk to you soon.